WLFP Braddock.
Good morning, world diners and travelers, and good morning, Peter.
Good morning. You sprung it on me again. You woke me up with a new intro.
Right. We have to keep on our toes.
Oh, we do?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, this is a sort of recorded radio show called OnTheMenuRadio.com. Listeners around the world, welcome to us, as usual, on Sunday morning or whatever time it is where you are.
Right. And there was a chill in the air this morning, and so I thought it would be really good for us to recall the balmy days in California, because we're still running some of the interviews we had there. And we have a couple of really interesting conversations with the man responsible for the wonderful Hog Island oysters that we had.
Opportunity for learning new things and experiencing new industries at Nick's Cove just continue to multiply. So here we are overlooking our gorgeous lapping water, and a neighbor is here, John Finger, who is the founder and owner of Hog Island Oysters. Hello, John.
Hi, welcome to beautiful Tomales Bay.
Well, that's it, Tomales Bay, and I have this wrong. Nick's Cove is a place on Tomales Bay. You just brought over this book, which we're going to put on our website, the Hog Island Oyster Lovers Cookbook, which is hot off 10-speed press. And anybody who wants to know just about everything about oysters can get this book. And I didn't know there was so much to know about oysters. How did you get into this business?
I got involved in this business. I've always loved the marine environment. I grew up on the east end of Long Island in New York, and fishing and clamming and hunting and growing food, working on farms. And I always wanted to combine those things. I went to school for marine biology to college, and kind of wanted to grow fish. I didn't used to eat oysters when I was younger. And one thing led to another. I got an opportunity to work for an oyster farm in California. And it was owned by a big corporation, and it was frustrating. And I worked there 2.5 years. But by the end of it, I said, you know what? There's a business here, and decided to start my own. So in 1983, and I think borrowed $500 from my parents, started Hog Island Oyster Company.
Now, you said you actually get a permit from the state for a bit of the bottom of the bay?
Yeah, the technical term is water bottom rights. In most coastal states in this country, everything below the high tide mark is public trust land. So some state agency is overseeing what happens there. So in California, it's the Department of Fish and Game. And we get 25-year renewable leases, and they're just the first agency we start with. Our first 5-acre lease that we got took us about a year and a half to get the permits on, after dealing with about, I think, 8 different agencies, from the Army Corps of Engineers to the local county to the State Coastal Commission, and you name it. So I guess we were just really crazy.
Now, you said that actually you don't feed them, you don't do anything to them, that the oysters are basically the result of where they're grown. Tell us about that.
Well, sure. It's what I really, really love about this business. And you hear this term, you know, sustainable, used a lot in terms of food production. And I really believe that in terms of sustainability, it's hard to beat shellfish, because shellfish are they're filter feeders. They're filtering microscopic algae that's in the water column. And as a matter of fact, there's a lot of places where they're trying to bring back more filter feeders into bays, because they help a bay or estuary function properly. Without filter feeders, the whole ecology of the bay can go upside down. So what they do is they are primary grazers, as we call them. They are grazing the microscopic algae out in the water column, and therefore it's really important where they are. Even within a bay, there are certain areas that are going to be great for growing oysters and certain areas that are going to be so-so for growing oysters. So, you know, I like to say that I think about 75% of this business is site selection in a bay, or even from bay to bay, where those areas are, where you've got enough flow and exchange with the ocean, but enough time for the water to be around, for the sun to really trigger the algae blooms. All those little things have to add up to have...
What do you start with?
We start with what we call spat or seed. On the West Coast, and actually in most places in the world now where oysters are produced, those are all produced in a hatchery. So we send the adult oysters to a hatchery and say, these are the kinds of families or lines that we want to see carried forward, because they've got some sort of good characteristics. And the hatchery, which is essentially a saltwater laboratory, by raising up water temperature and feeding them lots of algae, gets the adult oysters to spawn, which is to release eggs and sperm. And they mix in the water column and they form larvae. And the larvae are microscopic. Out in nature, this is, you know, they would be part of the plankton out there. And they float around for 10 days to 2 weeks, and then they lose the ability to swim. And at that point in time, they metamorphose or change into something that cements itself to something else, preferably other shell, because they form reefs on top of each other. But they could also do it on clean, hard surfaces like rocks or even driftwood or all sorts of things like that. And they start forming, they cement themselves to that, and they start forming shells out of the minerals in the sea. And so the hatchery does all that in a controlled environment. We actually do what's called a single seed method. They grind the shell into 300 micron shell chips. It's getting pretty technical, but that means there's only room for one larvae on one shell chip. So when they set and start forming their shell, they're all little single little oysters. And now the hatchery grows them for another month or two to get them up to about a quarter of an inch and then ships them to me. And when I get them in a styrofoam box, and they look like a bunch of granola. And there might be, in a 2 foot square styrofoam box, there might be a quarter million to a half a million.
Peter wants to ask this. He's fascinated with your cylinder, your rotating system. Could you explain what you do and why with that?
Sure. Most of what we grow is the Pacific oyster, which is the one that's grown all up and down the West Coast. And it's a very fast-growing oyster. And when you get started in this business, you think that's a good thing. But really, you produce a good quality oyster, both shell and meat quality-wise. You want to slow them down a bit. So we had done things over the years within our main system, which is what's called a rack and bag system, where we would manually go out and tip the racks or flip the bags up and down just to kind of maybe break off the leading edge of growth of the shells of the seed oysters and redistribute them in the bag so that the ones in the middle now could get out towards the edges and stuff. And that's a lot of labor. And a friend of mine tipped me off to this system they use in Australia. They're called Stanway Oyster Cylinders. And so we got some of them in and tested them, and we've been using them extensively now for the last 15 years and actually selling them to a couple of other growers. And what's great is they're a 4 foot by maybe 16 inch diameter cylinder that we create there's end caps, round end caps, and then we get mesh that's made that's maybe an eighth inch or quarter inch plastic mesh that forms a cylinder, and we put 5,000 of our seed oysters in there, and it's got flotation in these end caps and a little tab that comes off that a PVC pipe axle goes through. They fit into a frame in our farms out there that are in the intertidal, so every day they go dry for a period of time and then the water comes back in. Well, every time that happens, when the tide comes in, these things rotate up and float up, and then when the tide goes down, this is all around that axle, they rotate back down. So it tumbles the oysters every tide cycle, which does all that work that we used to have to do by hand, and it's just a great bit of technology that's really helped us out over
the years. Sounds absolutely. There's so much. People really get a hold of this book because it's going to tell you so many things you never even knew you had to learn about oysters, the Hog Island Oyster Lovers Cookbook. Tell me, I asked you how many different species there are, and you explained about species and places and names. And then I want to ask you about the people stealing your trademark names.
Sure. To start off with, the analogy I give people is about wine. Okay. First, the biggest difference in oyster flavors and qualities is going to be the type or species of oyster. And I think worldwide there's about 8 commercially important species. We grow 3 on our farm here. We grow the Pacific, we grow the Kumamoto, and then we grow the Eastern or Atlantic oyster here on our farm. In the past, we've also grown the European or French oyster. So those oysters grown side by side are going to taste very different because they select for different types of algae out there. They uptake minerals in different ways. It's just like the grape in the wine business. Then the second thing that's really going to affect the flavor is the place, just like the terroir in wine. So a bay, even within a given bay, you can have different qualities depending on the salinity of the water, how much fresh water is coming in off the land, what types of algae are predominating in that part of the bay. So that's given rise to lots of different oyster names. Say on the East Coast, you would have, you know, Malpex or Saint Simons. In eastern Canada, you would have Wellfleets or Island Creeks from Massachusetts. You'd have, you know, Blue Points or Pipes Coves from Long Island and so on down through Chesapeake and the Gulf of Mexico. That's all the same species, but the names reflect the bays and the places they're from and give you a guide to how they're going to taste if you know something about oysters.
Now, you say that most people getting blue points aren't getting blue points, and that you're going to have a special page on your website, which you might give us, although it's under construction, which will tell people how to know that they're actually going to be getting real Hog Island instead of counterfeit Hog Island oysters.
Sure. I mean, Blue Point is a great story in terms of trademark protection or lack thereof. Blue Point is one place on Long Island in the Great South Bay, and even in the 1700s, there was a law passed in New York State to say that only oysters from that bay could be called Blue Point oysters. Well, it became such a popular name that people started from other areas up and down the East Coast started calling their oysters Blue Points because it helped them market the oyster. And the Blue Point Oyster Company didn't chase them down. Over the time, lost the federal trademark for years. And still today, when you get Blue Point oysters on menus in many parts of this country, they could be from Delaware Bay, Chesapeake Bay, another place on Long Island, or who knows where. So you know, we have seen the same thing happen on a smaller scale with us, where you know our name is a trademark name, and it has to do with this place and our methods and the way we grow oysters. And so over the years, as we've wholesaled oysters and demand has exceeded supply, people start selling oysters that really aren't Hog Islands as Hog Islands. And we've gone instead to a scaled-down version of wholesaling. We sell only direct to restaurants. And as we rebuild our website, we're going to have those listed on our website to say, look, if you want to know you're getting real Hog Islands, these are the places to get them. And we know because we sell directly to them.
Well, I could talk to you forever, John. I mean, there's so much more to know. And I wanted to point out something you told me. Ladies, if you're expecting to find that pearl in your half dozen raws in a restaurant, forget it, because they're not oysters growing those pearls. It's an animal called a...
pearl.
Thanks so much, John.
Oh, that was fun. I mean, there, you know how I get involved with,
now, there's one thing he did.
And animals and things like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. There's one thing that he didn't mention, because those of you who've been to San Francisco know San Francisco well, probably know that there's a huge oyster sales shop and restaurant called the Hog Island Oyster Company right in the middle of the ferry terminal, and that is the same place. So they are Hog Islands.
Okay, well, we got that in, but it's now time to take a break.
The internet is crucial to your business. Everybody knows this, but did you know Nidhogg is the company you should call for internet service? Nidhogg, personal web page hosting for less. Business web page hosting, Nidhogg offers both Unix and NT server support. Nidhogg is the company you should call for dedicated internet access. Nidhogg offers DSL for high speed, low cost, always on access. DSL is great. It means no more dial-up. Oh, by the way, do you remember that thing called the telephone? Do you remember when people used phone lines to access the internet? Oh, I'm sorry, you still use dial-up? Well, Nidhogg does that too. Local access telephone numbers? Okay, I don't understand it all either, but I do know that I need it, and I know where to get it. Nidhogg, Nidhogg.com, 412-661-5917. That's 661-5917, or log on, Nidhogg.com. Internet the Nidhogg way.
I know I need to pay attention to my health, but I just can't seem to find the time. Between rushing to work and taking care of the kids, there's not much time left over for me. So I decided to start small by eating more fruits and vegetables and being more active. And then I got the family to make some changes too. We started by keeping a bowl of fresh fruit on the counter, and I limit the amount of sweet snacks I keep in the house. I've also found some creative ways to add more vegetables to our meals. We're taking more walks, and on the weekends, we head down to the pool at the rec center. It doesn't happen every day, but it does happen. You don't have to change your entire life to be healthier. Just make some simple changes and include your family. You'll see how easy and fun it can be.
You can make a difference. Eat smart, play hard. And when you do, your kids will too. A challenge from USDA.
Welcome back to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. Don't forget to check out our website. Haha, you thought I'd forget that.
No, I didn't.
www.onthemenuradio.com.
You can also send us email to onthemenu@onthemenuradio.com as well if you have something you'd like to tell us.
Right. And you can look through, browse books read articles.
But this next section,
and see pictures of our grandbaby.
Yeah, but you're not going to believe the next section of the program is going to be a rave about cheese straws.
Sticks.
So let's
sticks.
So be ready, listeners. Be ready for a wonderful product. John Macy. Hi, John. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you doing?
John sent us a whole box. Not just a single package, but a whole box, and we've already finished them.
Yes. And you know, there's part of me that is finally feeling relieved, because I always had that munchy craving for these things, and Peter kept opening the boxes. We had both the sticks and the short ones.
The crisps.
Mm-hmm. The crisps. Now, John, the product is called John William Macy Cheese Sticks, and your website is?
Cheese Sticks, www.cheesesticks.com.
Right, I knew there was something different about it.
Uh-huh.
And let's start at the beginning. Tell us how you got involved with cheese sticks.
Well, in 1976, I think, was probably about the beginning, maybe just the tail end of 1975 when I was just getting out of college. I had an interest in catering, was influenced by my uncle, who was a caterer in the New York City area. And I set out to become a caterer first in Santa Barbara, California, and then later in Santa Cruz, California. And in that first year, I think probably 76, I made the first cheese sticks as an offering for the as an hors d'oeuvre, as an appetizer for parties. And that's how it got started.
See, now I thought, off air, I asked you about this thing. I never had heard of a cheese stick before. And then when we had a party for our new granddaughter in South Carolina, the bakery where I got the cupcakes also sold me cheese straws. And I don't know what I expected, but they were soggy.
Well, we like to think of them as different.
I didn't like them at all.
They're really quite a different animal. Cheese straws, although the names are used interchangeably. We like to think of our product as a breadstick with cheese laminated into it. A cheese straw, typically, and it can be elongated or in biscuit form, is a very short biscuit, essentially, a little bit like a pie crust dough, with lots of, quite rich, with a fair amount of butter and sharp cheese cut
into
it.
Now you tell me.
And when they're fresh, they can be very good, but they don't have the textures that ours do. Ours are very crunchy, as I think you can attest.
Oh, yes.
And it's just two different things.
They're absolutely terrific now.
What are your flavors, John?
Well, let's see. We've got 13. I'm sure I'm going to miss one.
Well.
I have them committed to memory. I do, but, you know, when you're just ripping them off.
Right. And they're on your website anyhow, no doubt.
I do them historically. That's the way I can remember them best. There's the original cheddar, which we started with, and for 5 years that's all I made. Then there's a Romano garlic with basil and like a pesto cheese stick with Romano. And then a Dijon Swiss, a cheddar and scallion, a melting Parmesan, and a Tuscan.
Oh, I like that one a lot.
It's good. And, yeah. And a little bit texture on the melting Parmesan. We'll get to that in a bit. And then another Swiss cheese stick, but this one with what we call, it's a sun-dried accent. We call it a Tuscan Swiss. Those are all the cheese sticks. There are six of them. And then we have five of the cheese crisp, which is a similar product, but it's not as long as the stick. It's not twisted. It's a flat cracker, essentially, but still with that laminated construction. And we have five of those. Shall I reel those off, or is this getting tiresome?
No, you're doing fine.
Okay, good. There's the Asiago cheddar, which uses the same cheese combination as our original cheddar. Then the melting Romano, again, a little bit different on the texture on that. Smoked jalapeno, a white onion, and a sesame gruyere. So there you have 11. And then we have two sweet products. Did we send you any of the sweet?
No, but that's okay. We don't like sweets.
The sweet or the underdog? but you'll see them in the coming years.
And these are fabulous things because, I mean, we just eat them out of the box.
And indeed, that's the, I think that we, it's hard to be sure of it, but my sense is that 80% of our cheese sticks are consumed in just that very manner. But
how many calories are in these? I mean, I never bothered to check that.
Yeah, no, it's right there on the side of the box. It's two sticks, which is about 19 grams, is 90 calories, sorry.
90?
Whoops.
Well, no wonder I've put on weight, John.
Well, if you compare them to, I mean, certainly to potato chips or anything in that ilk, they compare very favorably.
Okay. The wonderful thing about them as well is
satisfying.
You can see how... I'm looking at an illustration of ways that you can make little cocktail snacks with cheese sticks. So I can tell the background from which you were coming because you have wonderful canapés. Essentially, you call them canapés, but it's a cheese square with a dab of sour cream on it. And then either smoked salmon or caviar or something like that of your favorite on top.
Yeah, just whatever you want, anything that's going to stick on the top there. There's quite a wide variety. And incidentally, that little booklet that you're looking at, which we call Cocktails in a Crunch, little double entendre there, is available to anyone who will go to our website and they can order it.
Great, and not only that, it tells you about cocktails as well.
And it does indeed, and a little historical anecdote about each.
Did you know, for example, here we go, listeners, did you know that the martini evolved from another cocktail which was called a Martinez, and is thought to have originated at Knickerbocker Hotel in Manhattan in 1912?
Huh. I must admit that before this was printed, I didn't know that either.
No, there you go. And then there's somebody called Samuel Tilden. What did he do?
Oh, he was a presidential candidate, and I believe he lost to Rutherford B. Hayes in 1876 in a highly controversial, probably the most controversial election prior to 2000.
And the Manhattan was invented for him at the Manhattan Club.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, we know, and there's this Harry's Bar. Here we go, in late Harry's Bar. Harry's Bar created the original Bloody Mary. Harry's New York Bar in Paris, bartender Fernand Petiot, created the original Bloody Mary. Asked about the name, Petiot stated, "One of the boys suggested we call the drink Bloody Mary because it reminded him of the Bucket of Bloody Club in Chicago and a girl there named Mary." And there was I thinking it was named after the Queen of England.
Yeah, no one would have thought.
Yeah. Well, she's still Bloody Mary anyway.
I think so.
But now, how many of these do you produce?
It does vary seasonally. Pretty much every specialty food company that I know, the busiest time of year is the last 4 months of the year, and we're just in the beginning of that right now. We count them by not the individual sticks, but there is a conversion. We do it by pounds. Today, for example, we'd be producing about 7,000 pounds. Yeah, I think that's about right. And the sticks are about 52 a pound, so if you do the arithmetic, I think you'll come up with 350,000 sticks. But it's a combination of sticks and crisps. So
now, typically, where can people buy these, John?
Where do they get them? And they are available not in every corner of the country, but generally in most of the independent specialty shops and cheese shops. Do you have a particular listening area that?
We're all over the world.
It's internet based.
Good. Well, then I probably don't know all the locations, but I will say that on the website there is a store locator, and it's not perfect. But if you put in your zip code, it'll give you some options that are relatively near to that. A number of the chains throughout the land will carry them. Not all. But the higher-end ones.
Like Whole Foods would carry them?
Whole Foods, certainly, but even stores, A&P has them in most of the Eastern Board of the U.S., and the Safeway stores will have them in the grocery section. Generally, they're in the deli area of the store, but in the case of Safeway, for example, they're in the cracker aisle, so sometimes a little bit of search is necessary.
Well, in my humble opinion, I think that anybody who does any entertaining whatsoever should have these as a staple in their pantry.
Oh, yeah, because they're
so versatile.
If you have them in the closet, you're prepared. Yeah, it should be. And that was the idea with Cocktails and the Crunch, that you just have a short time to prepare for people not dropping by with 5 minutes' notice, but just a little bit of notice, hour and a half, something like that. There's a lot you can do if you have some cheese sticks ready at hand.
You know, I was notorious once for having somebody show up unexpectedly for cocktails, and I had nothing. I was, you know, single, a little bachelorette, and I looked at all I had, and I put them together. Was I had a box of instant mashed potatoes and a tin of smoked oysters, and I mixed them together.
That's something anyway.
Yeah, essential staples that should be in a foodie's refrigerator. Instant mashed potatoes.
I used to love instant mashed potatoes for some reason.
One of the quickest things that we will do that's just so easy. I mean, these canopies are very nice, but with either the sticks or with the crisps, if you just put together a very quick mix, my favorite is just a simple combination of mixed nuts, some cashews and pecans with the crisps.
Oh.
It's a fabulous textural and flavor combination. It goes well with spirits as well with wines, and you're done.
Oh, wonderful.
This is fabulous. And listeners, just in case you didn't know, John William Macy provided this information to the earliest known reference to the cocktail was in 1806, and here's what has described. It's a perfect thing for the election season upon us. A cocktail is a stimulating liquor composed of spirits of any kind, sugar, water, and bitters. It is vulgarly called bittered sling, and is supposed to be an excellent electioneering potion. So, Hillary, you heard it here first. And Obama, maybe you don't indulge.
Well, John, you seem to be really very well-rounded in interests. You know, you seem like you've been around and pursued
So you're working on anything new?
Well, I might take exception to that. It's a nice idea that I'm well-rounded. I'm here all the time and driving to and from my house. It's rare that I think about anything else, about either what we are going to do in the coming day or what we could have done better in the day just spent. But
actually,
nice,
they did
nice
tell me
say that.
They actually did tell me that about you. But
yeah,
anyhow,
you're kind of single-minded. However, it does touch on a lot of different things. I mean, there's certainly we have a crew of 55 or I guess 60 now as we're going into the fall season, and that's certainly an adventure to get everyone pulling in the same direction, so to speak. So it's multicolored.
But John, thank you so much. We're getting signals now that we have to take another ad break.
Very good.
And it's just, I just think it's a delightful revelation to find these things on these John William Macy cheese sticks. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye, John.
Okay, talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Take a break now.
The flagship station of the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. This is 1550 WLFP, Pittsburgh.
Data security and speed can be what puts your business ahead of your competition. But cost is important, too. You might be paying every month for bandwidth you don't use. Let's talk about your company's disaster recovery system. Is it as effective and secure as it could be? What are you paying for your T1 line? I'll bet we can offer you a better deal. We're ASP Station, a premier independent server co-location facility and high-speed internet access provider. Virtually unlimited bandwidth, co-location for your backup servers, off-site system backup, and secure access to your equipment 24/7. Check us out on the web at aspstation.net or call us at 412-661-6001. Easy number to remember. 412-661-6001. ASP Station. 412-661-6001.
Welcome back to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig, and we have said goodbye to our last guest, but we've picked up a new guest, who is Emily Fritz Velasco, president of a very fascinating beverage company called One. That's a capital O, period, N, period, E, period. Welcome, Emily.
Thank you.
And why is your company called One when you have two products?
Well, one actually stands for One Natural Experience.
Okay.
And we use the acronym for it, obviously. And what we are is an all-natural beverage company, very, very, with very healthy beverages and very high function.
Now, how did you hit on this? And your husband is CEO of the company.
Yes, he's
Rodrigo.
My husband is the founder of the company as well as the CEO, and he's Brazilian, actually.
Okay.
And that's where our first beverage that we launched comes from. Actually, both of our beverages come from Brazil, but the first one is coconut water, and coconut water is a huge, very popular beverage in Brazil.
Well, you know, I told you on the break that actually I've had this long love affair with coconut water. When I was in the South Pacific, you know, you just stick a straw in a green coconut and drink it that way.
Precisely.
Yes, and then in Guatemala we used to mix it with scotch.
Yeah, we had it.
Talk about healthy, right?
Producer Ed was giggling about that during the break because we were talking to Emily. Curiously enough, there's a great link because right before the break, and you don't know this, Emily, we were talking with John William Macy, who makes the most fabulous cheese sticks, which are wonderful to go with cocktails. So if you happen to have rum or scotch, whichever is your choice, available to you to mix with your coconut water, all you need is John William Macy's cheese sticks, and you're covering all the food groups.
Yeah, now, this we get a lot of functional beverages, and the thing I liked about yours is that they weren't loaded with caffeine, sugar, and yerba mate, although yerba mate without the sugar is fine.
Right. No, that's what's so incredible about the coconut water is literally it's our one, that is another reason where one comes from, is we have one ingredient in the coconut water, and it's 100% natural coconut water. No preservatives, no sugars, waters, anything, and that's why it's just such a fantastic beverage for really everybody to be drinking. There's so many health benefits.
Yeah, some of these are just amazing to me, like it's good for your skin, and it helps urinary tract infections.
And the reason for that is because it's so hydrating. It's an isotonic solution, which actually means it has the same level or similar level of electrolytes as our own blood system or our own blood, and therefore it's incredibly, it hydrates you very fast and very effectively.
Well, I loved it.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Now, the coconuts come from Brazil. Is the juice must be extracted in Brazil, right?
Actually, with coconut water, it needs to be extracted at the site.
Right away.
It oxidizes quite quickly. So we literally, they crack them open there and put them into our little Tetra Paks, which are airtight, so therefore we don't need preservatives.
They do taste fresh. I must say that I could almost, if I were blindfolded, it's been so long since I had that.
So do they actually go in the little containers in Brazil?
Yes, they do.
Oh, right. Okay.
Now, I must say, I really was not as happy with the container. Because you peel that thing back, and then every time I picked it up, I managed to squeeze it and spill it.
they're not real shelf. If they're on the shelf in the refrigerator, they're not real stable. They tend to fall over.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
This is just a little bit of constructive feedback.
Yeah,
here.
But let's be fair. Have you ever looked at the racks in our refrigerator?
Well, they're not very flat.
The refrigerator dates from 1975, and they're great crooked, beat-up things.
Yeah, but they did fall over a few times. Now, this acai stuff, this is really...
That's going to be a crowded market.
This is really terrific. Now, and if I'm recalling the history of this product correctly, it used to be a secret of Brazilian Olympic athletes. Am I thinking about the same thing?
Surfers. And different athletes around Brazil. It's really been a great secret. Acai is a small berry that grows wildly in the Amazon rainforest.
In a top of a palm tree or something?
Exactly. They're not the same as the coconut palms, but they're a different type of palm tree, and they grow up at the top, so they're picked.
I've seen photographs of them. It's sort of interesting.
So who climbs up there to pick them, for heaven's sake?
Actually, they use sort of tall rods to go up there.
Oh, okay. So they don't actually climb up. They don't have to climb all the way up.
No, they don't climb all the way up.
Now, I always ask this question when I get all these functional beverages with all the health benefits. To get these benefits, how much of it do you have to drink?
Well, I guess it's as much as your body, you feel that your body would need, but I think in general, drinking juices that are rich in antioxidants, or in the case of the coconut water, rich in electrolytes, particularly potassium. It's just feeding your body good things. And, you know, I'm a big believer, and I believe we're seeing this a lot in the U.S., is people getting their nutrients from foods, from, you know, not manufactured, processed, enhanced. It's just really getting it from the natural foods that they're eating and or beverages that they're drinking. And I think that's a great way to get, you know, you can never drink or eat too little or too much. So it's a great way to get your nutrients.
If you know the question I'm asking, I mean, they've done these studies. I mean, have people sat there drinking gallons of this stuff?
Well, the only thing with coconut water I've been told is that, and probably the SIE too, is our nutritionist said you can't really drink too much of it, and except for the only thing that would be too much after about 10 of them would be the sugar levels. Again, they're all natural sugars, but then again, if people are drinking 10 Cokes a day, you're still doing better.
Mm-hmm. And now, how did you get started here? This is not exactly a mainstream-looking business, Emily.
No, it's not. What actually, my husband, you know, as I said, he's the founder of the company.
And he's Brazilian.
He was in Brazil, and watching this grow on the Brazilian market, in a matter of 5 years, the Brazilian market went from zero sales of packaged coconut water to almost the same level of sales as orange juice in the entire country.
Oh, my goodness.
So it grew fast. And like the United States, the people who lived in the interior of the country, you know, in cities not on the beach, they didn't know much about coconut water. It's the people who lived on the beaches who knew about it. And it's just taken off. I mean, now if you walk into McDonald's, you get a coconut water with your McLite menu.
Oh, my.
So it's really just, it's sort of escalated, you know, grown, you know, day after day, and it's just with the health benefits. I think it's one of those things that it's almost, I always say, it's like giving a gift to somebody because it's so fantastic for hydration and everything.
Okay, so you and Rodrigo decided that this would market in the U.S. and that's how you started.
Yes, exactly. Rodrigo formulated the brand one for the U.S. market, and then we set off to launch it here in the United States. And we've been on the market for about almost a year, or a little over a year, and it's been fantastic.
And now you live here, but
actually, we live in California. We're in Southern California.
Right now, I mean, but did Rodrigo think of this in Brazil, or once he got to the States?
Actually, in Brazil, and then we met, and then it came to the States.
Okay, I see. Now, are you planning on expanding into anything else? It seems that two-product market's kind of limited.
We're going to be launching next spring another 2 to 3 SKUs, and then as well as another 2 SKUs in the fall of next year is our plan.
Any hints?
Sorry?
Any hints?
Not ready to talk about it yet, but we're very, very excited, and we're excited to expand our line. And really, it's, again, they're going to be all natural, incredibly healthy, and functional beverages.
And for those listeners who are not familiar with a SKU is a stock keeping unit?
Yes.
Or in other words, a product line, an item on the grocery store shelf.
Right.
Miss Ann knew that, of course.
Yes, I did.
Probably 50% of the listeners did, maybe 51%, but now the rest of you know,
well,
too.
Well, but, you know, I didn't know it the first time.
There you go.
It happened in the show. And
okay,
I said,
then you asked me.
Yeah. And you said, you told me.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
now I
did.
Know. Your website
is? www.onenaturalexperience.com.
Aha, uh-huh. So just spell out that acronym.
It's One, O-N-E, natural, N-A-T-U-R-A-L, experience.com.
Right. You know, I was just telling listeners to just write out the acronym for O-N-E. Write it out. And
yeah, not the number one.
No.
Nope, O-N-E.
And presumably that's where they can find information about what stores they can buy from in their neighborhood?
We have an online store, as well as you can find a lot of information about the health benefits of coconut water and of acai.
Now, what did they do with the rest of the coconuts?
It's actually used for fertilizer on the plantations, as well as
the shells. The shells. The whole thing.
Well, that's exactly what it's used for. What they do is they chop it all up and then they reuse it into the land for fertilizer.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it?
Yep, our plantations are all sustainably grown. They're all planted in previously devastated areas. So, you know, it's not organic yet. We're working towards it as there still are, certain fertilizers, but there are no pesticides or anything used with our coconuts and our plantations.
Oh, that's
great.
Amazing.
So now you don't own the plantations. You buy from the people who own them?
Exactly.
Okay. I was just thinking, you own plantations in Brazil, too. Wow.
Well, we have very, very close relationships with them.
Uh-huh. And, I mean, is this probably, they already were probably experiencing some sort of a return on their product, right?
Oh, absolutely.
It's not as bad.
They produce over a billion coconuts a year.
Huh.
So it's pretty impressive.
That's quite a lovely bunch of coconuts, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, I mean, Emily, how did you come about being in Brazil?
I met Rodrigo here in the United States. We were actually both in business school. So this was a coming together of students from all over the world in business schools and at the University of Texas, and we met there. So then I went to Brazil a little after that.
Well, this is a wonderful story. So you're living your business case.
Exactly. Actually, I mean, the longer story is we met actually at a business plan competition that was hosted by the University of Texas, and he was presenting this business plan, and I was presenting. I had won the business plan at my MBA program or the business plan competition, and we were competitors, and I fell in love with him and coconut water.
And coconut water.
So.
Oh, dear. What a great story.
Our producer is smiling, has a smile on his face again. He's always it's always nice when he's entertained. I'm reminded of this wonderful English farce play called Charlie's Aunt, and the lead character is Charlie's Aunt from Brazil, where the nuts come from. That sounds like a nice way to wrap up before we go to a break.
Emily, we're going to take a break and run ads now, so thank you for visiting us.
Of course, thank you so much.
And good luck, and keep us up to date when you find out a new product, when you launch a new product.
Well.
All right.
Thanks,
Emily. Bye-bye. And we'll take a break.
Hi, friends. I'm Phil Marcus, the host of Real Estate 101, heard every Saturday here on The Edge, AM 1550. If you've been thinking about selling your house or buying a house, I'd like to speak with you. Choosing the right agent is one of the first and most important steps in the process of buying or selling real estate. It's critical that you choose an agent who has the knowledge and experience to not only find that perfect new home for you, but to also be able to guide you step by step through the often complicated real estate process. If you don't already have a realtor, may I offer my services? I've been a real estate agent in Pittsburgh for almost 30 years. I'm a life member of the Realtors Association, and I'm proud to say that I've earned both the GRI and the coveted CRS professional designations. Won't you call me at RE/MAX Heritage? The phone number is 412-241-4200, extension 154, or my email address is phil@philmarcus.com. That's 412-241-4200, extension 154, or phil@philmarcus.com. Let's talk.
Furnace working okay? How's your heating bills? You know, no kidding, an old or inefficient furnace can really add to the cost of keeping your home warm. If you want to keep costs down, get your furnace looked at, and I recommend Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning for that. The technicians at Bolster to Heart have been performing routine maintenance and installing high-efficiency heating and air conditioning systems in Pittsburgh since 1977. They're EPA-certified professionals who are continually factory-trained in all the latest installation and service techniques. They offer free estimates and don't even charge extra for Saturday service. They're a quality dealer you can trust. Stay warm this winter at the lowest possible cost. Call Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning at 412-367-3900. Maintenance or installation, Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning, 412-367-3900.
It all happened so fast. It was loud and scary, and I was trapped.
Katie is a kindergarten teacher in Pennsylvania. She was a passenger in a car struck head-on by a reckless driver.
That's when I met my guardian angel. His name is Sean, and he is a paramedic. Sean was there for me when I needed him. He knew just what to do, and he knew the right things to say.
Choose a career in emergency medical services. Call toll-free 877-PA-MEDIC. That's 877-PA-MEDIC.
Pennsylvania needs more guardian angels. I had mine, and he made all the difference.
Welcome back to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. We've been having an interesting conversation, first with my favorite new snack food, and secondly with my favorite coconut milk or water. It is.
There you go.
And
we had oysters at the beginning of the program.
We had oysters.
What could possibly be wrong?
Nothing. It's good. Well balanced food group.
What we need in the world is a great place to stay in California that has a wonderful restaurant associated with it, and right down the road we need champagne to go with our oysters.
So what we're doing today
is we're visiting with the chef of the restaurant called Farm, which is at a wonderful property in the Carneros region, obviously called the Carneros Inn, which is a huge property all the way up a hillside with buildings on top and a wonderful pool at the top of the hill, all owned by a company called Plump Jack. And those of you who know wines probably know that Plump Jack's in the wine business too, and they're in the resort business.
Yeah, I might say the resort was really wonderful. They had an infinity pool, and they had people passing around frozen grapes.
Yeah, and you had your own little house.
Yes.
Which is so that you can either rent a house just like you would a hotel room, but it's your own little residence with your own little patio outside and all that kind of stuff. Or I believe they're also big in timeshare as well. So you can buy a week or 2 weeks or a month each year.
I'd like the frozen grapes. I thought it was very hot and
frozen grapes
and lounge.
Yeah, there you go.
Around the infinity pool.
So it was just a wonderful place. We sat by the infinity pool and got sunburned, and then we went down to the main building at the bottom of the resort and we had a wonderful dinner at a restaurant called Farm, and he's the chef.
We always meet really fascinating chefs doing this work, and we've been at Farm at the Carneros Inn, and we're talking to the chef, who is like, chef, he's our new Bex, actually, but we'll talk about that in a minute. This is Chef Christophe Girard, who has produced this fabulous tasting menu for On the Menu at Farm. Hello, Christophe.
Well, good evening. How are you?
You're joking.
No, I'm not.
You have such a fascinating background. You were born where?
I was born in France. I was born in Chartres, where the famous cathedral is. And my whole family is from the Loire Valley.
Could you just, because we're all so fascinated, because we introduced this with the Bex thing, and Bex is so hot now, explain why I said that. You were a soccer player.
Yes, I started playing in France actually when I was 5 years old, and I kept playing until I was about 17 years old. Played 5 years professional, and after that I went to cooking.
Why did you go to cooking?
Because my mom didn't have any more money for me to stay in scholarship.
And you had talent.
Yes.
Obviously you had talent. We had a really fabulous meal here. The style is what? Your French technique translated into contemporary California with a lot of good ingredients?
That's exactly what it is. And we're trying to be very gifted to have beautiful product daily and beautiful wines.
We had this tasting menu, and the ingredients are absolutely, they were like to die for, starting with the heirloom tomato gazpacho. Are there any other dishes you would like to explain that we had that you particularly like?
First dish was the heirloom tomato lobster gazpacho and a little toy box tomato, tangerine oil. Very summery, very fresh, very sweet tomatoes, a nice acidity on the tangerine oil, and paired with the Robert Sinsky Pinot Blanc Carneros 2006. Also, another dish that followed was a poached foie gras torchon with nice stone fruits are in season. We have a great person who grows peaches for us and comes every Saturday at the restaurant with his truck, and his fruits are beautiful. Brioche that we make daily at the restaurant will serve as well with this. Pretty much everything else came up, was pretty spontaneous actually, knowing that you were coming at the restaurants. And
I even ate the desserts, so I don't even like sweets. And your sweets are very restrained. Is that because you're French?
Well, I have a sweet tooth. I don't know if it's because I'm French, but I always had a sweet tooth since I was a very little boy. And I think ending a great meal with wonderful desserts is very important.
What do you think that your big contribution is in California cuisine? Because you bring all these great other influences. What do you think you do different? Because this meal was very special. What is the sensibility you bring to it that's so different?
I think I bring a total positive attitude in my personality, and it reflects in my food. And I am always trying to make everybody enjoy what I do on busy day or on slow days. And bringing my passion and my right attitude makes everything goes well.
And listeners, let me tell you that it took us a long time to get this interview, because he's one of the few people in the world that makes me giggle incessantly. We had a good time, didn't we, Chef? Thank you.
We're at a farm restaurant in Napa County, but it's a dual appellation. Brian Nicholson, General Manager of Farm Restaurant. Can you explain quickly what that means?
Certainly. A dual appellation is a wine-growing region that's shared between two counties, in this case Napa and Sonoma.
It's a very special place in California for growing wine that a lot of people, I think, don't know as much about as they should. Can you give us just a couple of the characteristics that make Carnera special?
The most important thing, I think, would be the cooling influence from San Pablo Bay. This makes it particularly well-suited for Pinot Noir and Chardonnay.
And we had Pinot Noir, and I don't think we had Chardonnay, but that's okay, because you were guiding our way through this program. This restaurant is new, but it's vibrant, it's wonderful. How did you manage to get it going so quickly?
We started with a base of a professional crew, mainly Chef Gerard and myself, and we are really trying to build something special. In keeping with the Plump Jack Group, something that we call down-to-earth sophistication.
So the restaurant, I think, opened just a few months ago. Tell us just when. Before we forget, let's make sure that people also know how to be able to locate you on the internet, and then we'll come back to some other questions.
Certainly. The restaurant has been open since December of last year, and we can be found on the website thecarnerosinn.com.
And it's Monday night. Usually a bad restaurant night. Why is your room full?
I think that between the resort guests and also the locals, we're a very popular destination. And, we supply a wonderful product, and people are comfortable and flock here.
Some people found out about you that quickly. So what's next? You have a solid foundation from December 2006 to now. Just a little more than 6 months. What are you planning for the future? Do you have some more things on the horizon?
We're going to expound upon basically the tenet that we started with was, creating a restaurant that utilized seasonal local artisan products. We really want to seek out those local vendors that supply that fantastic product and present it in a beautiful, sophisticated way.
Now, I want to say, because I'm sitting here, and I've never had an interview like this, because these guys are laughing and giggling together. And there's a point to be made about this. Our tasting was so perfect because they are so attuned to each other's taste and style. And they kind of read each other's minds. And that's why they get along so well. But that's why they're giggling, because they already know that. And we're trying to explain it to all of our listeners. The only thing I can say is that people who want to have this experience of being put in the hands of two real pros, the chef and the sommelier manager, just come here and do it.
So what do you have to say about that, Brian?
Well, I thank you, and I'm glad that you enjoyed yourselves. I absolutely appreciate working with Christoph. He's an amazing chef. I love his philosophy of food, and I'm glad that I'm able to present that to our guests.
And I think in the last analysis, it's all about the food. So, Christoph, why don't you sign off with a final thought for our listeners?
I'd like to say for everybody who's listening to us today, just come visit us at the Farm Restaurant, the Carneros, when you're in Upper Valley, and you'll have a great experience, and we'll be happy to see you.
He probably just been giggling, too.
Yeah, he started giggling just all over again. It's like it was, those times, particularly like when you were...
I remember it well. I wasn't sure I didn't have to take the mic from him. In fact, I guess I did. She's at it again. She's at it again, listeners.
I know, I can't stop.
Miss Giggles.
So, but yeah, and I plead the patience from our listeners because of that technical problem we had with the mic on this trip in California.
No, we had a constant problem. Bear with us, listeners. We do have a... we do have a substantial improvement thanks to some technical support here at the studio. And now, shall we cliffhanger?
Sure.
She will cliffhanger for next week because we had a most wonderful interview on one of the days we stayed at the Carneros Inn at Domaine Carneros, which is about at least half a mile down the road, which is the flagship of the Tettinger Champagne family in the United States. And we met one of the most powerful people in the wine business, and certainly one of the most powerful women in the wine business, who is the president and president since the very beginning of a wonderful establishment dedicated to sparkling wine in the United States called Domaine Carneros. So we're going to go there next week because we had a long talk with Elaine, and it's been a little bit of a challenge to figure out how to fit it into the format of the program. But I promise you we'll do that next week. Tune in and hear what she has to say, because she's an absolute dynamite woman with a great deal to tell us about the sparkling wine business. So there.
Okay, and I'm going to stop giggling and say bye-bye.
See you next week, same time, same place.
To match your pretty eyes.
Nope. See, all colors have wavelengths that are diffused by oxygen and nitrogen. Since blue has the shortest wavelength, it's diffused up to 10 times more.
Who taught you that?
Mommy.
By sixth grade, too many girls lose interest in math and science, which they'll need for most future jobs. Keep her interest alive. For ideas, go to girlsgotech.org. It's her future. Do the math. A public service message brought to you by Girl Scouts of the USA and the Ad Council.
Do that.
Mommy.
By sixth
Jazzin' Around with David J. is next on The Edge, AM 1550.